तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृत दुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ कमिंग टू द लास्ट सेशन ऑन द भगवद्गीता, द कंक्लूडिंग पार्ट फ्रॉम वर्सेस 72 to 78। सो हियर कृष्णा हैज स्पोकन the charam shloka. Charam is the pinnacle, the climax. The charam shloka is what is the word used by Ramanujacharya to refer to 18.66. so that is the climax. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the Bhagavad Gita is like a jewel box, is like a treasury chest rather, and he says in a treasury chest there is a strong upper covering and a strong lower covering, and within that there is a treasure. So like that he says the upper six, the first six chapters and the last six chapters, they are like the covering of the treasury chest. So first six chapters talk about how karma leads to bhakti, the last six chapters talk about how jnana leads to bhakti, and in between are the middle six chapters, 7 to 12, which talk about bhakti directly, and they are the treasure. So this is his and his revelation of how the Bhagavad Gita is structured. But then he says that in order to inspire people to open the chest and discover the treasure therein, as a incentive, two shining jewels are kept on the cover of the chest. So when people see, oh, there's such jewels are there on the outer covering of the chest, there must be something wonderful. So those two jewels which are kept on the outer cover of the chest, they are 18.65 and 66, Manmanabha Madbhakto and Sarvadharmaan Parityajya. These are shlokas, these are verses which reveal the love of Krishna's heart, and they invite us, call us to offer love back. So in that sense, they are reflective in a very powerful way of the essential treasure of the Gita's message. So like this, the Gita is structured, and after describing in 18.65 and 66, Manmana Abho Sarvadhan Pratyajya, then Krishna starts giving a Falashruti. First he cautions about whom all we can give this knowledge in 67, then 68, 69 he talks about the glory of sharing this wisdom with others, 70 talks about studying it, and 71 talks about hearing it. So the here Krishna completes the Falashruti also. Now the Bhagavad Gita is not just abstract theoretical analysis. Krishna is hearing, Krishna is speaking this, Arjuna is hearing it, and like a serious teacher-student discussion, Krishna is concerned, has Arjuna understood it, understood the message or not? So in 18.72, Krishna asks Arjuna this question. So till now in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has been questioning and Krishna has been answering. But now Krishna questions to check Arjuna's understanding, whether Arjuna has understood or not. Let us look at the verse. So 18.72.
कच्चिदेत श्रुतं पार्थ त्वयेकाग्रेण चेतसा कच्चिदज्ञान सम्मोह प्रनष्टस्ते धनंजय।
So Arjuna is being asked, कच्चिद, whether is it एत श्रुतं पार्थ, ओ पार्थ, ओ अर्जुन, हैव यू हर्ड दिस एत श्रुतं,
त्वयेकाग्रेण चेतसा,
by you with ekagra chetasa, with one-pointed attention. With one-pointed attention, have you heard this? And if you have heard it,
kachid agyana sammoha,
has the ignorance and the illusion, agyana sammoha, pranashtas, dispelled. Te dhananjaya, O dhananjaya, O Arjuna, has your ignorance been dispelled? Has your illusion been dispelled? So Krishna is inquiring from over here, from Arjuna, two things. First is, have you heard attentively? And second is, have you understood clearly? So the first question is related in some ways to the battlefield context, battlefield setting. In when a turbulent and violent battle is about to take place, it's possible that the student may not be very attentive. Imagine if we have to have a philosophy, if we are having this Bhakti Shastri class in a noisy marketplace, there will be so much disturbance, and naturally often when a class is there And if, say, we are on a yatra especially, and then the sound system has to be arranged and everything, that time we ask, and the speaker often asks, you know, am I audible to you? Are you able to hear me? So that is to inquire whether the facilities for hearing are adequate. So similarly, now Krishna and Arjuna, there is in between their direction, the conversation, there is an inquiry. Now, of course, they are close to each other. So audibility is not a problem, but the ability to concentrate in such a situation can be a problem. So it's of course Krishna's expertise that by his presence and by his presentation, he transforms a battlefield into a classroom. And therein he reveals knowledge the like of which has never been practically never been revealed before and never will be revealed afterwards. Extraordinary knowledge he reveals. So he takes a student who is on the battlefield, converts the battlefield into a classroom and raises the student's thoughts and understanding to one of the climaxes in the wisdom all over the world. So still, Krishna is a concerned teacher, is inquiring. Arjuna, were you able to hear? Toi ekagrena chetasa, ekagrena, ekagrata. So actually, in the stages of samadhi, ekagrata is the penultimate stage. So there are stages, we have discussed these different stages in our sixth chapter, Dhyana Yoga. So ekagrata is a concentrated, the second last stage. So that also that can refer to a yogic stage of immense concentration, or it can in general refer to attention, concentrated hearing. So could you hear attentively, Arjuna? And then of course we say that attentively I have heard, but that is alone is not enough. Has Arjuna been able to understand? Kachit agyana sammoha. So ignorance and illusion, Krishna is using two words over here. So ignorance means to not know, and illusion means to understand wrong. So both are problems. Now there is the problem of not knowing. If I don't know, for example, if I'm sick, and if I don't know how to take a treatment, I'll stay sick. On the similarly, or even worse, if I'm sick and I don't know what is the treatment and I take some other medicine, that may lead to some further complication. So actually both are problems for us, to not know the right thing and to think of the wrong thing as right. So both of these misconceptions have to be removed. So Krishna is asking Arjuna, kachid agyana sammoha pranashtaste, pranashtas, destroyed, dhananjaya. Oh Arjuna, you are the conqueror of great wealth. So have you conquered this particular wealth? Have you been able to conquer over ignorance and illusion, and have you attained the wealth of wisdom? So the acharyas describe over here, the implication of Krishna's question is that Krishna is a compassionate teacher, is asking, have you understood? And if you are not understood, the implication is Krishna is ready to speak whatever Arjuna has not understood again. And if Arjuna wants, Krishna is ready to speak the whole Bhagavad Gita also again. So whole Bhagavad Gita again, that is the extent of Krishna's concern. Generally, nowadays if we have colleges and schools where there are teachers, and the teachers explain something in school, and often they explain in such a way that the students can't understand. If a student goes to the teacher and says, teacher, can you please explain? He says, I'll explain. Come to my private coaching classes. Now pay extra fees, then I'll explain to you. So for them, teaching is often a business. But for Krishna, it is not a commercial enterprise. It is a compassionate enterprise. Now, he is not concerned with anything that he will get. He is concerned with our well-being. So that's why he is saying, Arjuna, have you understood? Has your ignorance and illusion been destroyed? If not, I am ready to speak the whole thing again. And in this way, Krishna expresses his loving concern. So here, Arjuna replies. So Arjuna has spoken, the last time he spoke was in 18.1 when he asked the tattva of sannyasa and tyaga. And then now he is going to speak in 18.73, and these are the last words that are spoken in this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. So let us look at that question over here in 18.73.
So Arjuna Vacha Nashto Moha Smutir Labdha Tvat Prasadan Mayachuta Sitos Migata Sandeha Karishye Vachanam Tava. So Nashto Moha. Nashto means destroyed. Arjuna was asked by Pranashtaste. So Krishna is Arjuna is confirming Nashto Moha. Yes, Nashto Moha Smutir Labdha. Actually, my moha has been destroyed and my smriti, my memory has been restored. So what memory? Memory that I am the Atma, memory that I am primarily a devotee and I am primarily meant to serve Krishna. Nashto moha smutir labdha. And how has all this happened? Tvat prasadan mayachuta. So the word prasad is coming the third time in this 18th chapter. Mercy. Because ultimately bhakti is a path of mercy. So tat prasadan mayachuta. The word prasad has come earlier in 18.58. Then machitta sarva durgani mat prasadat tarishyasi. And then again it has come in 18.62. Tat tameva sharanam gacha sarva bhavena bharat tat prasadat param shantim sthanam prapsasi shashvatam prasadat. So prasad is mercy. So the Bhagavad Gita gives a lot of analysis, but in its conclusion, it is a path. It describes itself as a path of grace, as a path of mercy, and as a path of mercy, it is revealing such extraordinary levels of knowledge. So by Krishna's grace, that which we cannot understand very easily, we can understand by His mercy. So what is difficult for us to do, it becomes easy by Krishna's mercy. And Arjuna is saying, yes, it is by your mercy, O Krishna, that I have understood. Tat prasadan maya achyuta. Achyuta. It's significant that the first and the last references by Krishna to Arjuna are with achyuta. In the Bhagavad Gita begins in the first chapter where Krishna tells Arjuna, Senayor bhayor madhye ratham sthapayam me achyuta. Ratham sthapayam me achyuta. O Lord, please place me between the two armies. And now also, he's using the same word achyuta. Why achyuta? Chuta means that which one who falls. Achyuta means one who never falls. So Krishna never falls. Krishna never fails his devotees. So Krishna always remains transcendental and Krishna unfailingly helps his devotees. So in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna was serving Arjuna, and as a charioteer in that service role, he followed Krishna's Arjuna's request and took the chariot in between. Now even when Krishna is asking as a spiritual master, there is a bond of love, and in love the devotee wants to serve the Lord and the Lord wants to serve the devotee. So the Lord took on the role of a spiritual master, and Krishna is telling that, oh, Arjuna is saying that you are Achyuta still. You know, when you are acting, when you are the spiritual master, as a spiritual master also you are perfect. You know, you don't fail, you don't fall. So I asked you for enlightenment and you have given me enlightenment by your mercy. And then sthitosmi, now I have become properly situated. Earlier Arjuna was shaken. He was physically also trembling and internally also he was shaking. But now sthitosmi, and then gata sandeha. Sandeha means doubt. Gata means to go away. Arjuna's doubts have gone away. Gata sandeha. And then all my doubts have gone away. How? By sat prasadan. And now after doubts have gone away, then what happens? Karishye vachanam tava. I will do your will. Karishye vachanam tava. So actually the end of the Bhagavad Gita is what? It is not simply just an abstract intellectual exercise or elocution performance. No, it's a call for transformation. It's a call for redirection. It's a call for practical change. Just as a doctor, when the doctor gives a prescription to the student, to the patient, it's a call for change. Change means the patient, okay, you should do these things and you should avoid these things. So, and what does the patient do if a doctor tells, okay, this is your disease, doctor make sure to show some x-rays, explain some things. And at the end of that, what will the doctor say? Okay, now you have to take these medicines. And what should the patient say at that time? Patient should say, oh, doctor, very good talk. You're a very good speaker. And that is not the point over there. It's not how good a speaker you are. The point is, I'll do what you say. The patient has to cooperate with the doctor's prescription and do what the doctor is saying. So similarly, Arjuna is telling Karishye Vachanam Tava. So when we hear from the spiritual master, when we hear from Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and the devotees, actually after hearing, we may say, as a matter of appreciation, that yes, it was a good class, if we like the class. But the real appreciation is shown not in appreciation, but in action. Real appreciation is shown in implementation. Yes, we don't just speak that, oh, it's a very good class. Real appreciation is shown through implementation. I do the action of implementing what has been taught. And when we do that, then there is true benefit. That way Krishna is telling Arjuna, Krishna is giving a call for action to Arjuna, and Arjuna accepting that call. Karishye Vachanam Tava. We discussed earlier about how this section of the Gita, in this 18.73 reflects the pinnacle of surrender. In the Bible, there is a famous statement, "Let thy will be done, not my will." So, "Let thy will be done, not my will." This refers to just before the crucifixion, on the previous night, Jesus, by his foresight, was able to know that tomorrow there is going to be great danger. And at that time, he requested, "O God, let the cup pass." Let the cup pass means, at that time, one way people were killed were, if people were punished and they had to die, they were given a cup of poison. Like Socrates was given a cup of hemlock, a cup of poison basically. So, Jesus was referring to that, "Let the cup pass." That means, let the calamity that is about to come, let it not come. He made a request like that. It was a prayer. But then after that he said, "Let thy will be done, not mine. Let thy will be done." So, "Oh God, this is also surrender. That Krishna, what is your will? I'll accept it." But here Arjuna is going forward and not only saying that, "Let your will be done." It's like Krishna is himself through various agents doing his will and we accept it. But here Arjuna is saying, "I'll go further and say, I will do your will." So it is not just, my responsibility is not just to accept your will, but my responsibility is to implement your will. So he's implementing the will. And generally, when we talk about surrender, you know, it's important that we ask not why this, but how now. When things start going wrong, we can protest and resent by saying, why this, why is this happening like this, why is that happening like that. But instead of that, if we ask the question, how now means, okay, if this has happened, how can I act now, how can I best serve Krishna? If I act that way, then I will find a way to move forward in my life. And becoming an enjoyer is disempowering, because it leaves us at the mercy of the conditions necessary for that enjoyment. When we ask why this means, I had a particular plan for enjoyment and now I'm not able to enjoy, so I'm asking why this. But when we decide to become an enjoyer, it is empowering, because we become so much dependent on so many circumstances which are not in our control. In contrast, if we become a servant, that is empowering, because we have freedom. In all situations, we can serve Krishna. Maybe not in the same specific way, but we can always keep serving Krishna in some way or the other. Even when we are sick and on our deathbed, at that time we can definitely not enjoy our senses in any way. But there also, we can serve Krishna by remembering Him, by speaking about Him, by glorifying Him. And in that way we can move closer to Krishna. So becoming a servant is empowering. And that's why surrender is not passive. Surrender is not a weakening. Surrender is strengthening. Surrender is not disempowering. It is empowering. So now let's move to the next verse. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that moha, Prabhupada writes, nashto moha. So as I mentioned, moha refers to that which is opposed to knowledge. Opposed to knowledge means the living entity is a servant, living entity is a servant, but then the living entity thinks he is not a servant, but is a master. That is moha. And then Prabhupada explains, a simple explanation, Krishna consciousness is acting according to Krishna's order. So this is an important definition, because Krishna, Prabhupada has explained, Krishna consciousness is not just a matter of consciousness. Yes, it is a matter of consciousness, but then that consciousness has to be expressed through action. We think about Krishna, or think about Krishna means, we think about how we can serve Krishna. And when we serve Krishna, we move forward in our spiritual life by moving closer to Krishna through that service. So, Karishye Vachanam Tava. That is, he is ready to follow Krishna's instructions. Now the conversation moves back and Sanjay speaks. Sanjay Uvacha Ityaham Vasudevasya Parthasya Cha Mahatmanaha Samvadamim Ashrausham Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. So, he is telling over here. Ityaham Vasudevasya. So, between Vasudeva, Parthasya Cha Mahatmanaha, between Vasudeva and Partha, this conversation has happened. So there are levels of conversations. The Bhagavad Gita is it coming a part of the Mahabharata. So the Mahabharata at an outer level is what? It is this Mahabharata is narrated by Vaishampayan Rishi to Janmejay, who is the son of Parikshit Maharaj, the great grandson of Arjuna. So that is the outer level conversation. There are various levels of nesting in the Mahabharata, different conversations are happening. But then, within the narration of the events of the Mahabharata, there is Sanjay narrating to Dhritarashtra the events on the Kurukshetra battlefield. And within that narration, in the Bhishma Parva, there is the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. So there is outer level, Vaishampayan and Janmejay. Then there is the Dhritarashtra and Sanjay and Dhritarashtra, and that is Krishna and Arjuna. So now the Krishna and Arjuna conversation has been going on till now. So now the camera focus moves backwards. It moves to Sanjay and Dhritarashtra. So in one sense, the conversation of the Bhagavad Gita is also a conversation between Sanjay and Arjuna. Sanjay and Dhritarashtra. The Bhagavad Gita conversation starts with Dhritarashtra's original question. That Dhritarashtra Uvacha is first verse. He says, Kim akurvata Sanjaya? What did they do on the battlefield? So he's describing what happened thereafter. And now Sanjay is concluding that. And he's saying, what happened? The first thing that happened was this. This beautiful conversation took place. So as this conversation took place, Ityaham Vasudevasya Parthasya Cha Mahatmanaha. Significant Mahatmanaha. Now, Krishna, this word Mahatma has been used by Sanjay to refer to both the devotee and the Lord. Now, the Mahatma Anistumam Partha Daivim Prakriti Mahashrita, not by Sanjay, I'm sorry. Krishna has used this word to refer to his devotees, Mahatma. For example, in 9.13, and similarly, he says, Samahatma Sudurlabha in 7.19. So the word Mahatma is used to refer to devotees in the Bhagavad Gita, in Krishna's words. Now in the 11th chapter, the word Mahatma is also used to refer to Krishna. When Mahayogeshwar Ohari, so there the word Mahatma is also used to refer to Krishna. So here Sanjay is in one verse saying both of them are Mahatmas. Krishna is Mahatma, Arjuna is Mahatma. Now Krishna is, of course, he's the word Mahatma literally refers to Mahatma, the great soul. So Krishna is the super soul, is the Paramatma, is present everywhere. So he's definitely the great soul. But what about Arjuna? How is he the great soul? He's the great soul because he's surrendered to Krishna. He has understood the message of devotion and he has surrendered to the will of the Lord. So the small soul, when the small soul surrenders to the will of the big soul, the small soul also becomes big. How the small soul becomes big in influence. There's such a soul who's become big is called as Mahatma. So Parthasya Cha Mahatmanaha. And then Samvadam Imam Ashrausham. Ashrausham. Ashrausham means to hear. Shravan is to hear. So Samvadam Imam Ashrausham. I have heard this Samvad. This conversation I heard. And what is the nature of this conversation? Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. It is giving two descriptions of it. Adbhutam. It is wonderful, it is extraordinary, it's amazing. And as a result of this amazement, what is happening? Roma Harshanam. The hair on my body are standing up. So it is thrilling, astonishing and thrilling. And actually, if you think, see at the start of the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna was contemplating the prospect of fighting with his relatives, so at that time, Roma Harshascha Jayate Gandivam Sramsate Hasta Tvakchaiva Paridhayate. So at that time also he was discussing Roma Harsha. So Roma Harsha, the standing of the hair, it can happen in two situations. One is in a state of great fear, and second is in a state of great ecstasy. So Arjuna was very fearful, not just fearful of losing his own life, but fearful of being a part or even a cause of a great disaster. A disaster that would involve the deaths of so many people. So that time that the Roma Harsha was because of fear. This Roma Harsha is because of ecstasy, as will be seen in the next verses. So here he is saying, I have heard this conversation, and the result of hearing is, it's a wonderful conversation and my hair are standing on end. Roma Harshascha Jayate. So now he will describe, okay, how was I Asharausham? I've heard this conversation. Now, how has he heard? That he will describe in this one, 18.75. Vyasa prasada shrutvan etad guhyam aham param yogam yogeshwarat krishnat sakshat kathayatah swayam. So, Vyasa prasada shrutvan, by the mercy of Vyasa, we have heard. Shrutvan. Vyasa prasadaj shrutvan. So how is it that by Vyasa prasadaj shrutvan? We discussed it at the start of the Bhagavad Gita itself. Actually, Vyasa prasadaj. That means at the start of the Bhagavad Gita, or at the start, just before the Kurukshetra war, Vyasa Dev came, and he had tried to give good counsel to Duryodhana, but Duryodhana was incorrigible, not ready to hear anything. And then Vyasadeva spoke with Dhritarashtra, and he said, if you want to see the battle, I can give you eyes also. Dhritarashtra said, that what is the use of eyes? Throughout, I did not see the life of my sons. What is the use of seeing their death? He knew in his heart that actually they are all going to die. So therefore, he said that, what is the use? So, but still, I want to hear what happens. And then Vyasadeva said that, I will give special eyes to Sanjay, who is your secretary. So Sanjay and Dhritarashtra had a special relationship. Although Sanjay was, now Vidura and Dhritarashtra, they were brothers. Although Vidura was lower because of him born in a Shudra family. So he was not, he didn't ever became a king. But Dhritarashtra respected him for his wisdom. And Vidura would often give advice to Dhritarashtra. But when Vidura left, at that time, Sanjay, who had been clearly subordinate to him as a secretary, but Sanjay also would sometimes give counsel, sometimes try to give good advice to Dhritarashtra. So that's why, because Sanjay also had an intimate relationship, Vyasadev said, okay, I will give special vision to Sanjay. And what happened by that vision? Vyasa prasada shrutvan, by his mercy, actually, although he was far away from battlefields, Kurukshetra and Hastinapur are not neighboring cities also, they are quite far away. But although they are far away, there is a mystic television by which Arjuna was able to see. Sorry, by which Sanjay was able to see. And etad guhyam aham param. So actually, it is not just a matter of seeing. Though even if Sanjay had been right next to Arjuna when Krishna was speaking, that alone would not have been able to understand. So Vyasa Prasadaj refers not just to the special vision and audibility that was provided, but it also refers to the special comprehension that was provided. So it's, by mercy we don't just get vision, but we get comprehension. So what happened is, he was not able to only able to hear or see what was happening on the battlefield, but along with that he was also able to understand it. And that's why I say, actually this Guhya Param, so he's using the same words which Krishna has used earlier in 18.64. He says, Sarva Guhyatam Bhuya Shrunume Paramam Vachaha. So he said like that, most confidential knowledge, Paramam Vachaha, supreme instruction. So he's using the same words over here. Etad Guhyam Aham Param. And what is the speciality of this knowledge? It's Guhyam Param. Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishnat Sakshat kathayata swayam. Kathayata swayam. Who has spoken himself? Who has spoken it? Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishnat. That Lord Krishna who is Yogeshwar, who is the Lord of all mystic powers, he has himself spoken. How wonderful it is. You know, if we, throughout history there have been great elocutionists, and even sometimes even decades or centuries later, if some speeches some people have given, then the later on people hear those speeches. So there may be some heads of state before a historic wars, they gave some speech, a short speech which inspired the soldiers to fight on and to go forward and get a victory. Then afterwards historians and other people who study history, they say, oh, that was such a great speech. And then somebody will say, actually, I was there at that time when that speech was given. I heard that speech live. So, Sakshat, I heard it. So, Sanjay is telling, Sakshat kathayata swayam. So, Krishna himself spoke it. And Krishna is no ordinary person. If you look at the history of the universe in terms of the cosmic time scales that are described, within those vast time scales, actually, what Krishna speaks is so rare. When Krishna appears, it's so rare. Krishna himself doesn't appear, although he appears repeatedly, yuge, but still, in terms of the vastness of the universal time, Krishna's appearance, time span is relatively small. And within that also, it's not that all the time Krishna is speaking systematic philosophical instructions. No, mostly Krishna is performing lila and occasionally he may speak some instructions. We don't see Lord Ram speaking anything comparable with the Bhagavad Gita directly. He gives instructions at various places, but nothing directly comparable to the Bhagavad Gita. So, Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. So, it's very rare for the Lord to appear, and it's very rare for the Lord to, when on his appearance, speak philosophy so systematically and succinctly. And then it's even rarer for a devotee to be present at that, or for a devotee to be actually able to hear that. So, although Sanjay is not directly present, but still, it's as good as direct because he's able to hear. Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. So through this verse, we see Sanjaya's gratitude and appreciation. He's saying that, he's not just saying to Krishna, thank you for giving this message. Actually, the thanks is implicit, but there is much more than thanks over here. He's saying, oh, how fortunate I am. Sometimes we may speak the words of thanks without valuing what we have been given earlier. Without valuing what has been given, and for which we are externally using the word thanks for it. But here, when Krishna is speaking, Sanjay is appreciating, and he is saying, how fortunate I am that I was able to hear this conversation. And it was all by the mercy of Vyasadeva. So by his mercy I had vision, and by his mercy I had comprehension. Srila Prabhupada explains that, just as we have got this message, just as Sanjay has got this message, we can also get the message. So, Prabhupada explains that if one does not come to the disciples, he cannot hear Krishna. Therefore, his knowledge is imperfect. So, therefore, what he is saying is that actually we have to come in parampara and hear it. So, just as by Sanjay's spiritual master Vasudev's mercy, Sanjay was able to understand. Similarly, we can understand by the mercy of our spiritual master. And without that mercy, we will not be able to understand properly. So, as devotees, we are grateful to Srila Prabhupada and to our spiritual master and to the Vaishnavas who have given us understanding. Now, further, Sanjay will describe what happens now. He says, Rajan samsmitya samsmitya samvadam imam adbhutam keshavarjunayo punyam rishyami cha muhur muhum. Rajan samsmritya samsmritya, O king, here, remembering again and again, samsmritya samsmritya, samvadam imam adbhutam, adbhutam. So he's using the word adbhutam second time. Earlier he used the word adbhutam in just two verses ago. And keshava arjunayo punyam. So this is a punyam, it's a purifying, auspicious, sacred conversation. And what is happening? I'm remembering again and again, and Rishyami cha muhur muhum. I'm being thrilled, Rishyami. I'm taking pleasure in this conversation again and again. Again and again. So Rishami. So Prabhupada writes that the result of Krishna consciousness is one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. Muhur muhu, Rishami cha muhur muhu. So we'll just discuss about this Rishami, because the same sentiment is repeated by Sanjay in the next verse. So we'll recite that verse and then we'll discuss. Tachya samsmritya samsmritya rupamatya adbhutam hare vismayo me mahan rajan Rishami cha punha punha. So tachya samsmritya 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 samsmritya, hearing rupam atyadbhutam hare atyadbhutam hare. This form is extraordinary, atyadbhutam. And then after seeing this, now he is referring, atyadbhutam hare refers to the Vishwarupa which he has seen. Tachya samsmritya samsmritya. So he is remembering the extraordinary Vishwarupa that Krishna had shown, and he is saying vismayo me mahan rajan, I am immensely astonished, I'm wonderstruck, hugely wonderstruck, and Rishami cha puna puna. So there are similarities in this 76th and 79th verses, that Sarsvritya Samsmritya is there in both, in the first line of both. There it was Rajan Samsmritya Samsmritya, here it is Tatcha Samsmritya Samsmritya. So the first line has similarity and the last line also has similarity. There it was Rishami cha muhur muhu, here it is Rishami cha puna puna, Rishami cha punha punha muhu muhu. So essentially the meaning is same. Rishami, to delight, to rejoice, to be jubilant. Actually when we hear Krishna's message, the result of hearing Krishna's message is that we become deeply thrilled, enlivened in an extraordinary way. It is described that when Narada Muni had the darshan, Narada boy in his earlier life had the darshan of Krishna. What was the result of that darshan, of the Supreme Lord when he had darshan? Actually, the darshan thrilled him completely. It thrilled him so much that he was just, it was as if each and every one of his senses was independently enlivened. It was an extraordinary experience for him to have his senses enlivened like that. Amazing it was. So that's how he became extraordinarily enlivened. And Rishami cha punha punha. So similarly, what effect we can get by the darshan of Krishna, we can get that effect even by his remembrance. And especially along with the remembrance of the message, when there's a remembrance of the form also. So the thrill is enormous. Now in this world, people want new pleasures. And most people think that to get new pleasures, I have to do new activities. New activity. That's why what they try to do. They try to go to, travel to new places, or maybe they buy new gadgets, or they try to develop new relationships, you know, try to find out new houses, new spouses, all these things they try to do, new things. So people want newness in their life, freshness in their life, thrill in their life, and they try to do it by doing new activities. However, no matter how new the activities that we do, ultimately the pleasure available in all new activity, in all material activities, boils down to eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So ultimately there is no new pleasure available at the bodily level in material existence. There may be some superficially new covering, but ultimately this pleasure is boiled down to eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So if you want to rise above eating, sleeping, mating, defending, then we need to turn towards Krishna. We need to love Krishna. Now in bhakti, it seems as if we are doing the same activities constantly. We are always just chanting the same holy names, taking darshan of more or less the same deities, and then we are doing more or less the same activities, it seems. So although we are doing the same activities, then how is it that we get so much thrill? That thrill comes, we get freshness, we get joy, because that is not because of the newness of the activities, but newness of the person with whom we are connecting. Krishna is ever fresh. Krishna is supremely attractive, and he keeps revealing his attractiveness more and more and more to all living beings. And as his revelation becomes more and more, then we start relishing his beauty more and more. And that's why even if a devotee had to have darshan of Krishna, the devotee can just relish the darshan of Krishna for all of eternity. There is nothing else required for that devotee. Just that darshan can be relished for all of eternity. That is the sweetness, that is the glory of Krishna. So, Rishyamicha, Muhur Muhu, Puna Puna. So, the same way, if we remember the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita can give us thrill also. See, actually, the Bhagavad Gita is a conversation at multiple levels. You know, at multiple level means, yes, it is a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, of course, but along with that, it is also a conversation between Dhritarashtra and Sanjay. So now we see that the same message is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna and same message is repeated by Sanjay to Dhritarashtra. So Arjuna was under illusion and Arjuna came out of illusion. Dhritarashtra heard the same message that was spoken by Sanjay, or rather repeated by Sanjay, but Dhritarashtra was not changed. And Dhritarashtra kept hoping even after that the Pandavas will somehow lose and Kauravas will win. Of course, that hope proved to be futile, but he kept hoping and hoping like that. So what was the speciality? So by which Arjuna was able to understand and have a change of heart, as Dhritarashtra did not have. That is, Arjuna was submissive. Dhritarashtra might have been inquisitive, but he was attached, he was biased. So submissiveness alone is not enough. Inquisitiveness alone is not enough. Along with inquisitiveness, submissiveness also is required. That's why we see Pariprashnena and Pranipatena is also there. 4.34, while describing how we should go to a spiritual master, both are described. Pariprashnena, inquisitiveness, but along with that, submissiveness is also required. So Dhritarashtra was inquisitive, kimakurvata Sanjay, but he was not submissive. And that's why his heart did not change. And why was he not submissive? Because he was attached. He was very strongly attached to whom? To his son Duryodhana. And he was attached to the hope of being, of continuing on as the king. And because of that hope, he was blinded. In fact, earlier also, before the whole Kurukshetra war took place and before the conflict between the Pandavas and Kauravas became severe, Krishna had sent Akrura to Hastinapur to observe what is happening and to warn Dhritarashtra of the consequences of his misdeeds. But Dhritarashtra said, "Oh Vidura, what you have spoken is true." He said, "Not Vidura, oh Akrura, what you have spoken is true. It is like their words are like nectar, but unfortunately, I cannot accept them." He said that just as your words are like lightning in the sky in a dark night. Lightning illumines, it illumines for a few moments, but after that, again there is darkness. So like that, when we are too attached, that when we hear the words of wisdom, there is temporary illumination, but afterwards again there is darkness. So, as long as we are attached, then it is difficult for us to realize the wisdom of the Gita. Of course, you know, even if we are attached, we can start applying the Bhagavad Gita step by step by step. Even little, whatever within our attachments we bind us, but they do not completely freeze us. They give us some freedom, and within that freedom we can try to apply the Gita, and by that the bondage that is there, that will decrease, and eventually we will become free of the attachment completely and free to serve Krishna. But of course, the point of my discussion is here is not Dhritarashtra's mentality, but it is Sanjay's mentality. You know, Sanjay, in one sense, we may say that he was a failure. That he tried to explain the message of the Gita to Dhritarashtra, but Dhritarashtra did not accept it. So when Dhritarashtra did not accept it, what does it mean? That means that Sanjay was unsuccessful. It's like, you know, a teacher is explained to a student and the student doesn't understand. Then what is happening? You say the teacher has failed. So has Sanjay failed? Actually, Sanjay is not dejected. Sanjay is elated. He is jubilant. He is thrilled. He is shami. So why is that? Because Sanjay is receptively receiving and transmitting the message of the Gita. And just by that contact with Krishna, he is thrilled. So actually, similarly, when we try to share Krishna's message, if we are Krishna conscious, then we will relish Krishna's message even if people are not hearing and changing themselves according to harmonize with that message. So that is the glory of Krishna consciousness, that even if we speak and people don't understand, people don't appreciate, people don't change their hearts, it doesn't matter. Because by speaking about Krishna, we become purified. We come in contact with Krishna and we become thrilled by that contact. So therefore, actually there is no failure in Krishna consciousness. At a material level, sometimes there may be failures. You know, that means when we try to serve Krishna, it is not that service will be successful. We see in the Mahabharata, Abhimanyu at a material level failed. He fought against the Kauravas and he lost his life. But actually, he laid down his life in the service of the Lord. And by that, he crossed over illusion, he crossed over temptation. And Vyasadeva comes to console Yudhishthira at that time and he says, all of us, we are still in the world of temptation. But Abhimanyu, though so young, has gone beyond the reach of temptation and he has attained the eternal world. So rather than lamenting for one who has attained such a glorious decision, we should lament for all of us who are still in this world of temptation. So actually speaking, what Krishna is telling, what is Vyasadeva is telling Arjuna is that Yudhishthira is that there is no failure, there is ultimately success for a devotee. So actually when we are trying to serve Krishna, we need to remember that our primary purpose in service is not productivity or popularity, it is purity. Now we are serving Krishna not so that, oh, I have done this much service, this service, this service, this service. Or it is not even popularity. Oh, you know, so many people hear my lecture, so many people follow my instructions. No, our goal is not popularity or even productivity. Our goal is purity. And if we serve Krishna with that attitude, yes, Krishna, I want to become purified. I want to remember you. I want to speak about you. By that, I'll come in contact with you and that contact will purify me. So Sanjay is, although he's not, his transmission of Krishna's message has not transformed Dhritarashtra's heart, still he is relishing. And you see, Srila Prabhupada, for almost 30 years of his preaching, more than 30 actually, Prabhupada started assisting his godbrothers in their preaching right from 1932 onwards, when 1932-33 when he became initiated. And from that time till almost 1965 or even 66 when he went to America, so for more than 33 years, he got practically no success in preaching. But even during those times, whoever met Srila Prabhupada, they found him to be very cheerful, very jolly and very satisfied. And in fact, he was having nothing and he was so happy. That was what attracted people to him. What has this Swami got? He has nothing, but he's still so. He has everything. He has actually nothing, but he has something much more than what I have. I want to know that. I want to have that. I want to share that. So that's how people became attracted to Krishna. So as devotees, when we do service, we have to have this clear mindset. Even whether it's preaching or in a service, that I am doing this primarily to keep myself connected with Krishna, keep myself engaged in Krishna. And whatever benefit happens to others, that will happen. That is Krishna's grace going through me. And I'm grateful that there is some contribution to the world also happening. But if you focus too much on the external results of service, then that may dishearten us so much. Oh, the external results are not coming. And because of that becoming disheartened, we may not even be available when Krishna wants to give us the inner results. We may not get any external result of our service, but still we may become purified. And that will be a glorious result when we become purified. So we should be focusing on the inner result. And that inner result is, the more we become purified, the more our contact with Krishna becomes richer and sweeter. And then we will also experience this Rishyami cha muhurmuhu. And then after this comes the last verse of the Gita.
Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir Dhruvani Tirma Tirmama.
So Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna. So here Krishna is saying that wherever there is that Krishna who is Yogeshwara, he is the master of all mystic power. Yoga Ishwara. So you on the path of yoga, people get many mystic powers. And when they get those mystic powers, they can do wonderful things. And all these mystic powers come from Krishna. So Krishna is Yogeshwara. And Yatra Partho Dhanurdharaha. So the significant verse here is Dhanurdharaha. Arjuna has raised his bow. So at the end of the first chapter, in 1.46, what had happened was visrujyasa sharam chapam shoka samvigna manasaha. Because of the mind filled with shoka, what had Arjuna done? So visrujyasa sharam chapam, he had put aside his bow and arrow. But Sanjay is describing now, after hearing the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna has picked up his bow and arrow. So that means Arjuna has become ready to follow Krishna's instructions, ready to do Krishna's will. So the specific of the bow and arrow is not important, in the sense that for Arjuna, his duty as a Kshatriya was to fight. For us, our bow and arrow may be different. You know, for us, our bow and arrow, if we are devotees doing book distribution, then we may put aside the books. Oh, somebody takes books. But we may pick up the books and say, I'll distribute the books. For us, our bow and arrow may be quite different. But the point is, the bow and arrow, it is definitely, it is historical, real, in the sense that Arjuna had a bow and arrow. He had a Gandiva bow, famous bow. But it also represents something. Actually, Arjuna's Gandiva bow represents the living entity's determination to serve Krishna. The determination to serve Krishna. So actually, what happened at the start of the Bhagavad Gita is that Arjuna wanted to see. He says, I want to see. There are several places where he says, I want to see what is the strength of the people who are fighting against me. I want to see. So that by that seeing, he did pratyaksha, and then he started speculating. Started doing his own sort of analysis of the mind, and that led to Anuman. And by pratyaksha and Anuman, the result was his determination to serve Krishna got lost. But then, when he served Krishna, or how by hearing Krishna's message, then he picked up his bow again. That means his determination became restored. So similarly, in this world, by pratyaksha and anuman, our determination to serve Krishna can go away very easily. By pratyaksha, say, oh, there are so many people who are enjoying in this world. There is so much enjoyment available. And I am following this regulatory principle, chanting Hare Krishna. What am I doing over here? And anuman will do, oh, actually, that person is happy. I am not happy. If I become like that person, I will also become happy. And anyway, this bhakti, who has seen Krishna, who has seen the spiritual world, when will I become again the spiritual world? I don't know whether it exists also or not. We'll do all sorts of nonsensical reasoning like that, and what will happen? We'll visrujyasa sharam chapam, we'll lose our determination to serve Krishna. But then, when we associate with devotees, when we hear Krishna's message, we start thinking, oh, people look happy, but actually it's just a facade. People pretend to be happy, but there are so many miseries in life. There is inevitably old age, deceit there. There is adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhiplik, adhidaivik, aptapa. There are so many miseries everywhere. So how can there be any lasting happiness? If there is lasting happiness, then there must be a different place. And what is that spiritual level of reality where lasting happiness exists? That is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita. So the purpose of life is not to try to find lasting happiness in this place where there can never be lasting happiness, but it is to direct our consciousness to go to a place where there will be lasting happiness. That is the real intelligence. This is what we understand from the Bhagavad Gita, and then our determination gets restored. So just as our determination can be lost by pratyaksha and anuman, and the determination can be restored by shabda, as it happened for Arjuna, the same can happen for us. And that's why regular hearing is so important for us. We will see in general in our spiritual life that if our hearing becomes irregular, then whenever our hearing becomes irregular, then our whole devotional life will start becoming like a burden. Chanting will become a big burden. Doing any services, we'll just be battling internally with the mind so much. So much of our energy will go in the internal battle with the mind itself, that we will not be able to do much, and what we do will not be very enthusiastic in it. So there, why does this happen? Because we are not nourishing ourselves by hearing. So just as we get physical energy by eating food, similarly by hearing, we get spiritual energy. Spiritual energy is not something mystical. It's not some current of electricity, current of light that passes through the head or something like that. Spiritual energy means the desire and the determination to serve Krishna. That comes when we hear and we understand how much Krishna loves us, and how it is It is so wonderful for us to have the opportunity to love Krishna in return. And that day our determination gets restored. So that's how we will also become Dhanurdharaha. And then further he is saying, Tatra Shreer Vijayo Bhutir. So he's describing Dhruva Nitir Matirmama. This is Matirmama. Now Sanjaya has himself become enlightened, as he is revealing by the fact that he's become attracted to Krishna. He's thrilled in remembrance of Krishna. So he's telling that Matir Mama, what is my opinion? That wherever there is Krishna and wherever there is Arjuna, that means wherever there is the Lord, where there is a miracle working Lord and a determined devotee. So what will happen, the combination of that? Tatra Shreer, there will be opulence. Vijaya is victory. Bhuti is extraordinary power. Vibhuti was a word which is used in the 10th chapter to describe Krishna's extraordinary power. So Bhuti, Vibhuti are similar. And Dhruva, Nitir, Matir, Mama, Nitir. Really morality also. So actually, this is another answer to Sanjaya's question, Dhritarashtra's question. Kim akurvata? So he said, what happened? Immediately, what happened was that the whole Bhagavad Gita was spoken, and that was narrated by Sanjaya to Dhritarashtra. But the implication of Dhritarashtra's question was, what happened means, who won? That was his concern. So Sanjaya is making a prophecy. He's telling that actually, that where there is Krishna and where there is Arjuna, there will be victory. Tatra, there will be victory. And that means he's saying there's no hope for your sons. They are going to lose. It is the Pandavas who are going to win. Tatra Shreer. There will be opulence. You know, Shri can also refer to the goddess of fortune, Shri Devi. So actually this is what both Bhishma and Drona tell Duryodhana when they are commanders. Still the Kaurava army faces severe reversals. And at that time, Duryodhana almost chastised, although his commanders are far more senior to him in age, but still he almost chastises them. And he says to Dronacharya, he says, "Yes, sir, you promised me that you will get Yudhishthira arrested." That was what they had discussed. So Drona says that, we can only endeavor. The result ultimately depends on destiny. And the Lord of Destiny is on the chariot of Arjuna. So what can I do? So the Lord of Destiny. So like that, Tatra Shreer. So actually the goddess of fortune will be there on the side of the Pandavas, because her Lord is also there. So opulence will be there, Shri, and by that opulence there is victory. Now Dhritarashtra may think, no, but actually there are such formidable warriors on my side. There is Bhishma, there is Drona, there is Kripa, there is Shalya, there is Karna, there is Ashwatthama, and my own sons are very powerful also. So how can there not be victory for my side? He says, no, actually there is Bhuti, there will be extraordinary power. All the power of all these warriors cannot compare with the supreme power of Krishna. And they will be overpowered by that supreme power. And then, some people say that, Krishna used immorality. The Pandavas used immorality to kill the Maharathas like Bhishma, who was shot arrows by Arjuna from behind Shikhandi. Drona, who was killed by Drishtadyumna while Drona was in meditating. Karna, when he was trying to take the chariot wheel out of the ground, Arjuna shot him. So some people may say like that actually they were killed unfairly. There was no unfairness, because they had all participated in far, or they consented to far greater unfairness. And shatho shatyam. For the cunning, with the cunning one can be cunning. So there is actually the idea that whatever happened with the supreme morality is what is the will of the Lord. Sarvadharman Pratyajamam Ekam Sharanam Raja. So that the Pandavas were ready to do these things, where they could have won without using any of these strategies also. But the fact that they referred to these strategies and they won thereafter indicates that they were ready to sacrifice morality for spirituality. They were ready to sacrifice morality for devotion. And that commitment to pure devotion is the supreme morality. So therefore, Nitir. So there, where there is the magic miracle working Lord and where there is a determined devotee, there is going to be the supreme morality. There will be victory. So this is the prophecy by Sanjay at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada gives a classic purport to this verse, and we will discuss just a couple of sentences from the verse. That's why Prabhupada says that the Bhagavad Gita is the last instruction of Gita, is the last word in all morality and religion. So nitir. In all morality and moral religion, this is the supreme instruction. And then Prabhupada talks about how the supreme truth is realized in three aspects, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. And then he talks about how the most confidential instruction is surrender to Krishna. And then Prabhupada gives a summary of the five tattvas that are talked. And he concludes over here, by proper use of that independence, he refers to the living entity, comes under the direct order of Krishna, and thus he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency. And that is the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita, that is the whole purpose of Srila Prabhupada starting ISKCON, that is to restore us in our normal position in the pleasure-giving potency, under shelter of Radharani, wherein we will get the supreme pleasure in loving service to Krishna. So this is the mercy of Krishna that is manifested through the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita starts with Krishna's question to Arjuna's question to Krishna about what should I do? Please tell me what is dharma. That was in 2.7. You know, prachami tvam aham dharma vimudha cheta. And first, in the first five chapters, Krishna talks about second to sixth chapters, Krishna talks about how, you know, you should not renounce action, you should do action, but do action in the spirit of detachment. That is the dialectic that happens in third and fifth chapter. Then sixth chapter, he talks about, okay, when you are sufficiently mature, then you can renounce and go to the forest and do yoga. But at the end of sixth chapter, he says, but the topmost yogis are those who are bhaktas. And then he says, so therefore, you also become a bhakta. Maya asakta mana, he says in 7.1. And how to practice bhakti? That is described from in the seventh chapter itself, the four kind of people who surrender to Krishna, the glory of Krishna's position and Krishna's devotion to Krishna is talked about. Then, the eighth chapter compares Ashtanga Yoga and Bhakti Yoga and establishes supremacy of Bhakti Yoga. The ninth chapter talks about Bhakti Yoga even further, and it starts revealing the heart of Krishna in a very intimate way. Kaunteya Pratijani Name Bhakta Pranam. My devotee will never pay Name Bhakta Pranashyati. So, the ninth chapter talks about Bhakti very sweetly. And then bhakti centers on remembering Krishna. So in the 10th chapter, Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita also gives a concentrated essence of bhakti, how Krishna, the devotees love Krishna and Krishna loves his devotees. And then after that, how can we remember Krishna? In the material world, the vibhutis are talked about. And to help us understand the divinity, supremacy of Krishna's position, the Vishwarupa is revealed. And then it is conclusively established in the 12th chapter that the personal form, meditating on the personal form is far better than contemplating on the impersonal manifestation. So in this way, the middle six chapters talk about bhakti very beautifully. And then the last six chapters talk about how jnana leads to bhakti. So Krishna talks about the various concepts, purusha, prakriti, kshetra, kshetra, jnana, and gheya. And he talks about how all these, that madbhakta etad vijnaya, all this can be understood by my devotee. And right in the middle of the jnana section also he talks about my madbhakta etad vijnaya, my bhakta can understand it, 13.19. And then he goes into the 14th chapter, further analyze it. 13.22 is the bija vakya, purusha prakriti stohi bhungte prakriti jan gudan, that the living entity gets lodged in matter because of the desire to enjoy. And then the tree of material existence expands. So the tree of the material existence, it is nourished by the water of the modes. So those modes are talked about in the 14th chapter. Guna sangos, that was mentioned in 13.22. So what is this guna that is talked about in the 14th chapter? And that also again, it says that if you want to go beyond the modes, bhakti yogena sevate, maam chaya vibhijarena bhakti yogena sevate, 14.26. And again 14.27 is brahmano vipratishtaham, that I am the support of Brahman. So again, even in this jnana section, bhakti and Bhagavan are very systematically established as supreme. Then after that, the tree of material existence is mentioned in the 15th chapter and is established how Krishna is Purushottama, he is the supreme person, to whom we should surrender if you want to get out of this tree. Then the upper and lower extremes of this tree, the divine and the demoniac natures that are talked about in the 16th chapter, and then the intermediate parts of the tree. Those who have faith but not in scripture are talked about in the 17th chapter. And then in the 18th chapter is again like a summary of the Bhagavad Gita's content. So first Krishna talks about how it is better to do action with detachment than rather than just giving up action. And then he analyzes the five factors of action, and then he analyzes jnanam cha karma cha karta cha and dhruti, buddhi and sukha. And all this analysis is meant to establish how karma yogi, if having proper knowledge, can stay without bondage. And that is talked about further in the system of Varanashram, where people act according to their prescribed duties for the sake of the Supreme Lord. For Sakarmana Tamabhyarcha, worship Him with your work. And then from there, Krishna talks about from 49th verse onwards to 54th verse, he talks about Jnana Yoga. And then from 54th, 55 onwards, he talks about Bhakti Yoga. And then this is the gradual ascending process from Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. But from 56, 57, Krishna says that Sarva Karmani Pisada Kurvano Madhya Pashya. Wherever you are, you just practice Bhakti. And then he talks about Bhakti very sweetly, talks about how we are controlled by our Swabhava, and the way to go beyond Swabhava is by surrendering to the Lord of the Swabhava. And Krishna says that I'll give you the most confidential knowledge. And then he speaks those Manmanabhav and Sarva Dharman Parityajya. And then there is the Phalashruti. And then there is Sanjay's ecstatic declaration of the glory of the Gita. So in this way, there is a journey which culminates very clearly in the supremacy of Krishna as the most glorious sadhya, and para kevala bhakti, pure devotion, as the most glorious sadhana. And that is the essential message of the Gita. That is the essential message that Srila Prabhupada has given us by His mercy in His Bhagavad Gita as it is. So as it is, what does it mean? The conclusions are made crystal clear, not just in the conclusion, but throughout the flow of the Gita. That there is no other supreme reality apart from Krishna. Matta parataram na anyat. And there is no process as glorious as the process of bhakti. So this message has been given to us by Krishna, and it has been repeated so forcefully and vividly by Srila Prabhupada for the benefit of all of humanity. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Thank you. Hare Krishna.